Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 735. The Fun Comfortable Tour is in full swing. I feel like touring just never stops, but this is the Fun Comfortable Tour. Just had some amazing shows in Texas, and this weekend we'll be in Buffalo, New York, and also Toronto as part of JFL 42. Go to funcomfortabletour.com for tickets and info. Let's go to the Nerdist Community Corkboard. This is from a listener who didn't write their name. Since Chris digs bowling, I'd like to share our 19th annual Strikeout Against Cancer Bowl-a-thon. Proceeds go to Women Care, a community nonprofit organization that provides free cancer support services to women and their families in Santa Cruz County and surrounding areas. For more info, go to strikeoutagainstcancer.org. Also, Will Bolt and Genevieve Mueller write, "Hey, we're comics who've had more than a few run-ins with death. On our Dead Things podcast, we talk about and try to find the humor in people dying. We have guests on, Ben Cronberg, Adam Todd Brown, and talk about their experiences with death, sometimes dwelling in dark areas, but always finding the humor and humanity into it. We also do a recap of the week in death. Here's a link to the podcast, soundcloud.com/deadthingscomedy. If you listen to the Paul Rudd podcast, you know that we, I assume, would both support this. This episode is Felicia Day, my dear, 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 dear friend, whom I adore. She's promoting her book, You're Never Weird on the Internet, almost, available now wherever books are sold. Of course, Geek and Sundry, which is something else that you should go enjoy. But Felicia is constantly inspiring to me as someone who just picks up and makes stuff. She has made her career, and she deserves every good thing that happens to her. So I'm lucky to have her as a friend, and as I said, I'm constantly inspired by the work that she does. So she's back on the podcast. Here's Nerdist Podcast number 735. Felicia Day returns as Katie rolls the thing.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Literally nothing you can do to pay me to live there or anywhere with snow. It's a problem. I've been watching a lot of House Hunters International because
God, the best.
I want to be an expat. It's in my future.
I think you're going to move to like Bulgaria and find one of those apartments that doesn't have any plumbing or anything
yes.
in it? Any appliances?
It's charming. You can make do without a dishwasher. Why would you need one?
It's not even that. It's just that they'll march them into these apartments that look like caves, literal caves.
Yes.
And then somehow.
It's unfinished.
Yeah, it's barely started. Like it was finished a long time ago, like centuries. And then you know, it cuts to like 3 months later, and it basically looks like a fucking like Wayfair.com
yes,
catalog.
Exactly. And I'm always suspicious. I've heard rumors that they won't feature somebody unless they've already put in and accepted the bid on one of the apartments.
Oh, right.
So it's a total fake.
I mean,
it is
television, you know. They got to make sure that they don't. Because then, you know, if they spend all the time and money following a couple around and they don't find anything.
No, you're right. It's
a
good point.
Yeah.
But I'm always like, I always pick the one they should have been in, and it's never.
Yeah, I mean,
I have a very low batting average.
I think you just have to watch all television the way that you watch like Law and Order and go, okay, well, this person didn't really commit this crime. You know what I mean? Like you have to suspend your disbelief for pretty much all of television.
I mean, they do decorate really well, and I'm like, wow, that would be really nice to have a modern table and not one of my cat's primary. I have a beautiful dining room table that is only my cat's dining room.
You know, I think
only my cats eat on it.
I think the people on HGTV that actually The design aesthetic that I think is closest to kind of the stuff that I like is the show Fixer Upper, where
yes, the couple,
yeah,
is she not like I want to.
She's
be
rad
that
and
couple.
He's really funny.
Yes,
Chip Gaines, Chip, right? Joanna, yes. Like they're fucking awesome.
She's amazing. She's a little bit too much with the hanging an antique window on the wall, but other than that,
you know, there is one like vintage aesthetic that I wouldn't really have in my house, which is like. The old sign letter with the yes, with no, the no. Edison bulbs in
no,
it.
No, like it's terrible. That, yeah, like sex, but X. You never know what it is. You never know what the first letter was going to be.
But I think they do a really good job of like, oh, we found this old piece of wood, so we turn it into the kitchen island.
And it doesn't look like if you were in that house, you it's good for the camera, but you poke it and it falls over.
Yeah, but the what's the other one? There's another one that I really... Oh.
Oh, fix it or flip it or which...
Well, there's Love It or List It. And
Love
then
It or List
And then there's
it.
Flip or Flop. Flip or Flop is the Orange County couple.
Oh, those are the... Okay, they're the worst.
Tarek and Christina.
Admit it. You would not want to have dinner with them.
I don't know. I
would what, you?
You know, maybe I feel like I would want to have dinner with all of them just to find out what they're like.
Maybe they're really, really nice. Their child is adorable.
Adorable.
It's just... My problem with that show is not the people so much. I mean, they're not my kind of... people right. necessarily. She definitely looks like a girl who would really hate me in high school, but but it's the formula of that is a little bit stronger in that she it's always like he's always like, oh no, it's there's the electricity needs to be redone. I'm like, dude, you knew it. You knew.
Well, you have to know that if a lot of times if you're buying a house at an auction site unseen, or if you're walking into something that's falling down and you're like, I can't believe it's only $300,000 in this neighborhood.
Yeah.
You have to know that there are probably animals in the walls. But that's part of the drama. Like they know, I'm sure they know, but they have to play that out as the arc of the story.
It's no, you're true. No, but the problem is with me is that I only watch those shows when I'm on the road. And when I'm on the road, I just want to go to bed at 7.
Yeah.
So I watch 4.5 hours of the same show in a row.
Over and over and over
again.
And
then
yeah.
You're like, oh, I see where they're going. When in fact, it's really me who should have turned the TV off 2 hours.
Now, Love It or List It is the show with the Canadian hosts where
it's
the British lady and then the
bald
guy.
She's very high strung.
She's very high strung. But I yelled at the TV the other day because they were going to remodel this couple's house to see if they would love it. And this insane woman, they had a townhouse, and there was only one bathroom on the main floor. The bedrooms and everything were upstairs.
Yeah.
And the woman was like, I want an open floor plan. Let's take out the bathroom. And the British one was like, you can't remove a bathroom. Do you know what that does? She's like, I don't care. I want an open floor plan. And I was like, you idiot! You don't remove a bathroom from your main floor. She's like, if people want to go to the bathroom, they can walk to the top of the stairs. Like, what are you thinking?
Oh, you're an idiot. Did they do it?
Yes, they had
oh,
to
my
because
God.
That's what the couple wanted.
No, no.
That was one where I wish it had resolved where it was like, and then their lives fell apart after this incredibly poor decision to remove a bathroom.
Well, I think
shortly after they divorced, you know, like it just felt like that was such a dumb
bad.
And I felt like, oh my God, this couple's lives is full of those types of decisions where you're like, why would you do that?
If you followed them in the reality series, you yeah. would, one after another, it's fine. Put two eggs in. It's yeah. I can handle triplets or extra.
Yeah, let's
whatever. That made no sense.
Let's just remove the garage completely. In place of what? Nothing. I just don't want a garage there. Why would you do that?
I'll just do an Ashley Madison account with my work email.
Walk to work if you want to. Yeah, it was. So I do get frustrated with.
What about tiny houses?
That like show that pisses tiny houses pisses me off. Well, there's one.
Okay, there's Live Tiny or something like that. There's House Hunters Tiny House Edition. Which...
I like the one where the purchaser actually is involved with the design
yes.
and sometimes construction of it, because at least I feel like they're doing something about it. But when it's just we're gonna live in a tiny house, they must be coached. I'll walk in and go, oh, there's not enough space.
It's
like,
little...
oh, you're fucking kidding me. It's called tiny houses.
Are you kidding? The one that I literally was like, I can't watch the show anymore is when they were like, my requirements are, it's got to fit my king size bed. I need a bathtub. And I'm like, what are you signing up for? Or the woman who did huge horse paintings. Like, I'm not kidding. Like 5 feet by 2 feet, 3, 4 feet. And she's like, not enough wall space for my art. I'm like, bitch, yeah, you're going to get one on the wall.
If you're lucky, you'll have an inch of wall. You're moving into something the size of a double-decker minivan.
Exactly. Why don't you start painting smaller, woman?
You know, but there was one really cool couple that bought an old school bus, and they themselves like did all the work and modded it. And at least I can respect that from a crafty person, you know?
Yeah,
like,
that's
as
cool.
As opposed to people who are you know, who want to just live in a tiny thing. Because, look, okay, fine. I understand it's cheaper to live in a $25,000 dwelling than a $400,000 dwelling, but I feel like some of them are doing it for hipster reasons, and that's what irritates me.
No, there was one episode that this girl was looking for a tiny house, and she was a sound therapist from LA, and I'm like, I swear to God, I've seen her at Real Food Daily. I swear to God. And she was way, you know, she was the kind of girl who looks like she's, you know, a popular hippie, you know what I'm saying?
Right,
like, she's
right,
like,
right.
Look at my drapes. It's, you know, very free people. So, and she,
I totally get that reference.
Thank you.
I'm paying. It's like trust fund, trustafari. Like, yes. I'm paying to look like I don't give a shit. I'm paying to look
Hote Hippie, which is an $800.
Yeah.
That is a great label, but I would never be able to afford it. And I guess, you know, some other hippie woman who could spend $1,000 on a blouse could do that. But
yeah.
She ended up living in a tent because she didn't want a kitchen inside.
Oh.
She had a principle. She's like, I just don't want a kitchen in the space. And I'm like, are you kidding? She wants to live in. She ended up living in the Hollywood Hills in a tent.
Yeah, that's a little much.
I know. I hated her. Let's hire her and like maybe just play cymbals.
I like the ones when they're in Hawaii and they have to debate, you know, like how much money they can spend versus how willing they are to live in like an active volcano zone. Where they're literally like there's a house and it's 5 feet from like a lava flow.
Are you pro lava flow?
I'm anti lava flow. I mean, it's like it's dangerous. There's noxious gases, you know, like if it seeps in the wrong direction, you're fucked. I mean, like you can't fight back a lava flow. That is one thing you cannot fight. You cannot fight a lava flow. It is impossible to fight a lava flow. So, but some of them, it's, you know, it's like making that decision of, you know, what zone can we live in to fit our budgets? How close can we?
And it's usually between, and I've done a scientific study. They never, rarely do they go for the over budget one. You know, they'll often go with the under budget unless it only has like a shower stall that's 1 by 1 foot.
That's right.
Then you're not going to do it. But other than that, in general, the rule is nobody ever goes over budget in these shows.
I do enjoy watching people try to make horrible things sound really good. Oh, that's clever. The shower is a hose out back. You know what I mean? Like they because everyone's a terrible actor. And then there's Island Hunters, which has this host, and I feel like his name is Ryan or something. But
I haven't seen Island Hunters. That could be my next one. So.
Island Hunters is really interesting because, you know, a lot they shoot a chunk of them in Canada, these island colonies, and they just find an island. There was some old house that someone built on an island at some point, and then, you know, it's a lot of it is debating whether or not you can get electric and water, or if you have to
bare minimum, or you just need to poop in the woods.
If you need to poop in the woods, yeah. But they'd be your woods, like you own the woods.
That's true.
So you get like an acre island, you know, and then you could just live on an island, but then you're there. I mean, you know, it's like it's a little bit of a...
It's a commitment.
You're
not going down to Starbucks.
No. You're not just popping in for coffee.
Well, I love the general dynamic in these things is, and I would say, especially when people start to have kids, which as a woman makes me afraid. Like, am I going to be that woman? Because it's usually the man's the dreamer. And he's got the dream. We want to be an expat. We want to have a farm. We want to have a goat. And they're just like, no, honey, we actually need to have a room for the child.
I know.
And I'm like,
we love watching those because Lydia almost always points out, like, look how miserable the wife looks. Look how upset she is by this whole process. And the guy's like, this is going to be great. We're going to get a fresh start. She's like, we could have just moved across town.
That's true.
We could have just moved to the other side of Philadelphia, you know?
But it's never the girl's dream. And I'm like, what is that about? Because it's my dream.
Yeah,
I'm like, am I a guy? What is going on?
No, you could just. I think you just need to drag some dude into the middle of Europe and be like, "Shut up, this is your home now."
Shut up, we're squatting. It's Bulgaria, Prazda or whatever.
It makes me realize though that there's a lot of places around the world that I'm like, oh, I would totally live there.
Where would you move? Like, where would be your scenario of like, I'm gonna take 6 months off. I'm going to take a year off, and I want to live somewhere. Where is the most attractive that you've seen? Probably on House Hunters.
On House Hunters?
Well, no, anywhere. Anywhere, but particularly as pertains to shopping and seeing the apartments.
You know, there's some really old parts of Italy that seem really cool.
Oh, Tuscany.
But, you know, normally, before I think I would have said London, but I feel like that's an easy choice because it's a city. But, I mean, it's a big city that's, yeah. You know. But, you know, I honestly, when I went to Austria over the summer, there were,
Vienna's
you know,
so pretty.
Vienna's pretty, but Salzburg is just endlessly charming.
Really?
It's a wonderful town.
You like an oompa band?
It was like a little oompa, but it's, you know, it's just a small little town. There's a river that runs right through the middle of town. Everything's right there. It's charming and gorgeous and historical. And,
yeah.
And there's this ominous castle that sits at the top of a hill and just sort of looms over everything.
You had a thing for the Swiss Miss Girl.
I did.
So basically...
Yeah.
Heidi.
Yeah, I just want to shoot some marshmallows into your hot chocolate. You see where that was going.
It was good. Yeah, I loved it.
I want to put my dick in your butt, all right? Okay, fine. I'll just get it right out. I want to put my dick in your butt. My ejaculate was the marshmallow and that. The hot chocolate was your hot steaming anus. Like, we get it. I'm sorry.
Salzburg can't wait to welcome you with open arms.
Also, that's Swiss. That's not...
Oh, okay.
But yes.
Great. I'm a Nordic racist. I'm sorry. Germanic. That's even worse. It's not even Nordic.
All white people look alike, Felicia.
Oh,
we get
God.
It. We all look alike.
Blonde blindness.
We totally get it.
If I were going to pick one place, I have two places that I've been in the world that I would want to live, and Barcelona is one of them.
Uh-huh.
Barcelona. Only because I love narrow, creepy, high streets, and I like the idea. It's kind of like a Skyrim city.
Yes.
And everything's very close together. I was there, and I saw a real prostitute. Like, not that I haven't seen a prostitute before.
Oh, my. You're so worldly.
I know. You guys.
Real prostitute.
Seen a sex worker. Got it. And I could tell. I'd seen her right outside the hotel a couple times. And I noticed her because she really penciled on her eyebrows and had no eyebrows and it was only penciled in. And I was like, oh, that seems authentic to Barcelona. But I was like, oh, I turned to my boyfriend. I was like, oh, is she a prostitute? He's like, yeah, she's a prostitute. I mean, there's obviously like a man who handled, and it was very sad. And every night she looked even more angry and depressed. And one day I was like, can we just hire her and take her dancing? And I wish I could say the story was we took her dancing and she, you know, found a new light. He would not let me hire her.
He wouldn't
know. He was like, no, that's not happening.
But you know that you never know where that could.
One day it could. That could be an indie film romp. So one day I will write that movie.
That's so funny that your take was like, I'm going to free you.
I'm going to just give you a couple hours of joy. We're going to get waffles. We're going to go dancing at a disco. We'll share tapas. But you can. I'm a hypochondriac, so it'd have to be.
Where did you meet your girlfriend? I rescued her. I have a rescue girlfriend. I rescued her from the street.
That's like a terrible, that's a terrible sexist skit that I kind of
the worst.
Terrible.
The absolute worst. Yeah, okay, so if you were going to live in Skyrim, where would you live?
Oh, that's a good question. I did the DLC where... Did you do the DLC where you could build a house and have
orphans?
Yes,
I did every inch of DLC until I was just fucking taking home groceries to adopted children.
That's what I did. I had a whole house in my what was the home city that we started in?
Riften.
Riften, I filled with potatoes and tomatoes, just as a joke. I would stop by and I would throw potatoes and tomatoes into the house, and it really got to the point where it was quite full. And then I was like, I'm going to keep my little family in the cottage house. And then I would try to cheat. You know, I had my husband, Scout Mini Marshes. He was an Argonian. And I parked him in the wilderness with the children who were very ungrateful that I rescued them.
Yeah.
And did you play on the console?
No, yeah, I did. I played Xbox.
Yeah, so there was little to no way to actually decorate your house. So I ended up like, I was so excited. I bought all, you know, I decorated with everything that you could get in the house. And then I was like, I'm going to move this mask that I got from a dungeon here. And I try to place it. And all you could do is kind of fling it across the room.
And then it would just hit the wall.
It would hit the wall and go on the floor. And I'd be like,
you have to pick it up again.
Damn it.
Yeah, I did. I did the trophy room. And I did all the little things that you would need to assemble to put a trophy.
But you can't do it. They didn't give you the actual Sims capability. I want a Sims Skyrim, and that would be literally my day job.
Oh, that'd be so much fun. Yeah. Well, I didn't do Elder Scrolls Online.
No, I didn't. It's too much. But I've been playing Witcher 3 obsessively. Have you gotten into that? Because that's almost as
I started Witcher 3, started to get a little motion sick. I think I may have told you that.
You have to get over it.
Yeah, and then
you have to get over it.
Then I had to go to work. You need to fucking get over it.
Don't be old. Don't have an inner ear problem.
I didn't have a spell to stop motion sickness. Yeah, but I went through the training, and
the training is boring.
Yeah.
It's boring as hell.
You can say shit.
Okay, it's boring as shit. And actually, Witcher 2, I didn't play because the training was so boring and trying to get into it. But once you get on your steed that just appears from nowhere, you know, you whistle, which I can't whistle, but I'd be like, literally, he's there immediately for you to jump on. And there's a guy named Dudu in it. So there's a whole sequence that I just did this long quest line where there's this shapeshifter guy named Dudu. And everybody's like, where's Dudu?
Oh, that's amazing.
You just laugh a lot.
Do you get NPCs in your party to take along with you?
You don't get NPCs. You have a lot of friends that are from old Witchers that I only played the first Witcher, so I don't remember really a lot of context there. But there's some really like odd things that happen, you know, like there's a guy who has troll friends and you can romance quite a few ladies. Like, I don't know if you played first Witcher, but everybody's breasts are all out in this game, and it's just very prominent, very melon-like breasts on everybody's part. And you have a lot of like one night stands you could do, but at the same time you have two main lady storylines that you can go after: the redhead who has like Mono McDonald hair, or the really bitchy girl with the dark hair with a very nice accent. So
yeah, I don't, you know, because I can't remember if I got married in Skyrim or not. I had one companion for a while.
Lydia?
Maybe.
She's the first one, right? I haven't played in so long. I'm going to get it wrong.
The thing that drove me nuts about Skyrim was that you're all of a sudden, like, a dragon would appear, and then all of a sudden your NPCs would just be gone.
Oh, no, they would run.
And they would either run, or you would run across from town to town, and they just wouldn't be there. Like, where the fuck did they go? And you try to trace back. So you'd have to go back to a save point.
You'd have to go get them, because you can't replace them, because you can't cut them off unless they're in your face.
I had a pretty badass combination. I had an ice wizard and a fire wizard.
Oh, that's nice.
And then, of course, you know, I could summon a couple of storm thralls. And so we had a nice little party, but then they would just disappear. Here, and then you'd have to go, or you'd have to scout and find, oh, the ice wizard died, I gotta resurrect him again.
Yes.
And
but you forget there was no indication of where their body was.
There was no way to find them. You just, a lot of times you just had to go back to a save point. And I also loved that, you know, especially with horses, all of a sudden
they go vertical,
or there's just like a horse standing on a wall and it's just like his back hoof is just on the it's just on the wall.
Well, that's the problem with Witcher, like that horse has no ups. So you're just like, what is your problem? Go more vertical. I'm used to this. I had I did all this, the quest where I got the dragon, you know, not the dragon steed, but like the dark, like the dead, undead, really badass steed. What was that guy's name?
It was the one near the cave.
Yes.
That you summoned from.
You could summon. It's so long ago.
Yeah. I can't remember his name.
And
I lost him somewhere. I don't know where he went. I never saw him again. Yeah. I wasn't able to get him back.
It's almost like you want to hire a witcher in Skyrim to find your companions and pets.
Please cross over.
Well,
please.
Those are my favorite games.
I know, mine too. But the problem is, I'm terrified to really start playing Witcher because I know that it'll be difficult for me to put it down, or it'll be like 6 days before I can pick it up and play again.
No, I've been playing. It's my favorite. It's my staycation, so I get 2 hours a night to play Witcher. And there's so many side quests. I mean, and anywhere you ride, there'll be a side quest. And then, I mean, it is. I don't know if you played Dragon Age Inquisition, but
I did a bit.
So it's overwhelming the number of quests there. This is like twice that many, and they won't go away. It's like
it's too overwhelming for me.
I know, but it's so fun. I mean, there's one I just tracked down a serial killer who like was murdering people and pouring acid down their throat, and then. You know, I have to hire some jesters. You know, it's like A to Z, man, in that game.
Do you just do it because you like the quest, or are you just trying to get like side experience points?
I just do it for the stories.
Just for the fun?
Yeah, I'm a completionist, so I'm like, oh, I got to go race some horses. And they have an internal like card game you have to play, which is kind of like magic-ish kind of Gwent. Thank you. And it's almost like I almost have to go and restart the game because my Gwent game is so low.
Oh.
Like, I haven't collected the right cards to be able to beat the people who are on my level, which is, like, level 20 now. And I'm almost like, wow. It's almost like when you play WoW and you're like, I didn't level my mining or my herbology, you know, when I was playing, or herbalism.
Yeah.
So I almost have to re-roll a character. I don't know.
Yeah, I was with Skyrim, it was like I was a really terrible lockpicker. Like, my lockpicking skills were low.
Why? You didn't invest the time. What about blacksmithing? You can make some badass stuff if you invest your blacksmithing.
I did up the blacksmithing, and then I did up, you know, there are certain there are certain workarounds for, you know, like you could up certain
skills. Oh, yeah. You always do like a dagger.
Yeah.
There was a secret where you could.
Yeah, you do a dagger. You can make it. Yeah, you make a bunch of daggers and then you go sell them and then you make a bunch more.
Yeah. There's techniques. I mean, that's what I leave to the masses to break the game for me. So, I mean, there's one that the Sunless Sea, which is a great little tiny indie game where you drive a boat around an underworld, is kind of Cthulhu-like, and it's really cool, but it's a slog if you don't have money. So I'm like, how did somebody crack this so I get free money? And I just cheated. And Now it's wonderful, right?
Because
life is too short.
It is too short. And we're fake nerds. So
Fake
nerds.
Fake gamer girl.
Fake geek girl.
Gay. Oh my God, I really love games because I want a gamer penis.
So funny. Will and I fucking we do that to each other all the time. We're like, fake nerd.
Fake
nerd. Fake geek.
Well, I mean, there seems to be a litmus rage point in Pokemon particularly. Have you ever encountered that? If you don't know a lot about Pokemon, they're like, you're dead to a certain segment of the world.
Yeah, and I know the bare minimum of Pokemon because I just missed my age group. Like, yeah. I just missed it. I was slightly too old.
You have to be like 25 to 30 right now
I was slightly too old to pick it up. Well, like by the time it came around, I was already trying to deny all of my nerd stuff because I was trying to fit in with everyone.
Yeah.
And then I had to, of course, because it kept bleeding back in and making situations awkward, when I was 31, I was like, okay, well, I'm not.
Let's do this.
Well, by that time, you're comfortable with yourself anyway. Like, that's where you start to get comfortable with yourself. So I really miss Pokemon, and it was hard for me to
me
go
too.
Back.
And then, but I've done some like video game playthrough things on my channel where people are like, oh my God, you don't know who Charmander is. You don't know the lore.
I know
of
Charmander.
Misty. You don't know Misty. You are fake. How dare you put her ponytail?
Or you don't know what, or they're like, or if you ask about two different Pokemon, they're like, that one evolves into that one?
Yes.
You know, and you're like, oh, I'm sorry.
Get your Poke literate on.
But I, you know, honestly, though, I can see really getting into it because I got so into Animal Crossing New Leaf, I mean, for like 6 straight months.
I don't know enough about. I tried to get into Animal Crossing, and then I was just like, I want this to be more like Sims, so I can cheat and decorate things better, more aggressively. That's how I felt about Animal Crossing.
The key to Animal Crossing is to know when to go fishing, so that you can catch all the rare fish to make all the bells.
I'm gonna have to get some tips for you when I get my Animal Crossing expertise.
Yeah,
my
of
degree
course. I'm happy to help you. I'm happy to help you with that. That one I actually do know.
Yeah, Magic the Gathering is the one, and D&D because my mom. It was a weirdo, and she allowed us to read absolutely anything except Stephen King, because Stephen King was going to turn us into an axe murderer for some reason.
What?
But I don't know. I think she had a fear of clowns, and one time I brought it home, and she was like, absolutely not. I'm going to draw the line on this completely unstructured environment at Stephen King and meeting other people for D&D.
All right.
But my brother became an expert on reading D&D books. So now I decided, well, hell, I'm just going to make a company and do all this. Thumbs nose, Mom. I'm going to do this.
Do you guys, because our friend
Matt Mercer
just had the I was supposed to he invited me to play with you guys.
Oh my God.
And I ended up being out of town
the
two consecutive weeks that you got, because you did it in two consecutive
weeks.
Right?
I did guest stars. Our friend Matt Mercer does Critical Role, which is a live D&D thing that we do on Thursday nights on my Twitch channel,
and he's a great voiceover guy too.
Well, they're all, and what I found out, because my friend Ashley Johnson, I don't know Matt, I knew Matt just tangentially, but I knew Ashley Johnson from the Whedonverse, and she was like, oh, I'm doing this D&D group. And this was 2 years ago. And I was like, oh, my God, a bunch of voice actors doing D&D. I'm like, I have to have this. I want this to be a show. I want it primarily just so I can be in on a game. So and then when we started doing live streaming, I was like, well, I think this is going to work. And everybody was like, nah, I don't know. And it turned out to be our biggest show just because they are so talented. Matt,
oh, yeah. Mercer's
Marisha,
a fantastic
Marisha.
DM. Matt and Marisha, like Matt DM'd a game. It was like, it was me, I think, and Marisha and Michelle Morrow, and
oh my God,
and
so good,
and Jesse and Malik from Nerdist, and we all had a game that we never finished. We started a campaign that we never finished.
That's
and so,
the problem. I did one for 3 years, and I think the only thing we accomplished was that I somehow became pregnant during the thing. It was weird. It
but
was
in a, real life, so it was
no,
strange.
Not in real. No, it was on a ship because I was like really determined to be a virginal like a librarian.
Yeah,
which I actually ended up playing a version of that character on Critical Role. But she, so basically, the DM always was trying to de-virgin. And no not in an inappropriate way, but he was always like, it was always a smooth pirate coming up to me like, huh?
So your virginity was a side quest, basically. Like, he was trying to claim the... trying to claim the Ruby Maidenhead. That was the game.
What did you play? What was your character?
I always play wizards, magic. I always play magic users, and you know, unfortunately, I always play lawful good characters. I know they're boring, but
it's so hard not to.
I always want to do the right thing. I always want to play the chaotic good one, but I always want to do the right thing. So I always play lawful good characters. But it was a year.
Are you ever like, hey, you're a hostage, let him die? Like, I can't ever do that in a video.
No,
game.
You have to. No, you. I can't. No. I can't. Either I'm not, even though I know it's fake, I still feel
I can't do it.
I think it's Catholic guilt, but it was a period of time last year when I was single and I was playing D&D with them, and someone tried to set me up with a girl via text, and so we started talking.
Do people do that?
They did, and she said, oh, what are you know? She, I said, well, what are you doing? And she was like, I'm at a sports bar, and I'm like, I'm playing D&D.
Oh, and goodbye.
And her question after that was, are you winning? Which is such a funny, which is such a fun, such a great question.
That's sweet.
Are you winning?
Did you ever go on a date, or was it like the text?
We did. We went on a date.
Did you know what she looked like before you started texting her?
No.
Was it the texting chemistry that was like, let's try this? Or was it the sports bar? Because you're like, I need a date job.
You know what it was? I think it was just the, I'm single, I might as well go on a date with someone and just see what happens. And she was very nice, but she went on a, nothing happened. We went on a date. We met for coffee to say hi, to make sure that none of us were murderers.
Yeah.
And then we went to dinner, and it was very, you know, it was very nice and sweet and polite. And then she actually
playing in the NFL.
She went to play in the NFL. She's a linebacker. And then she ended up going on a tour around. Like, she was going to go tour the world for like 3 or 4 months.
Oh my
God.
Jealous.
The guy set us up because I think in his mind, he was like, see, she's leaving the country. You guys should hook up because, you know.
Why? That's terrible.
That
logic.
Was a guy thing. And it's also not really the way that I operate. And so nothing happened.
Wait, so you could get some action and then she'd leave?
He was trying to get us.
I'm trying to understand man
logic.
He was
trying to have us both get action. It wasn't just he was friends with her and he was friends with me.
So you can have a booty, like get a booty call before she leaves the country.
I guess she gets a dong call or something before she leaves. But it just didn't, I just don't really operate that way. So it didn't, and she, you know, she was very nice and it didn't, you know, and so nothing happened. She went away.
That's
and
pretty cool. She went around the world though. Yeah, I'm always jealous of people who do that.
That can just pick up and go.
They're like, I'm doing my soul searching quest.
Well, I just had 2 weeks off myself.
Did you go around the world?
No, I didn't go anywhere.
Oh.
I did not go anywhere. And I don't remember the last time I took a vacation like that. And it was fucking rad. And
well,
I thought about
you a
lot.
House. Oh, good. Yeah.
Because you know, I remember about a year and a half ago, you were on the verge of a breakdown and you go,
I was in it.
I'm leaving the country. And you left and you didn't do anything for however long you were gone. And you came back and you were like, I'm so thankful that I went and took off.
I know. That's why I'm like, I look at people who are like, hey, 3 months, you could actually do that. You could go and rent a place for $2,000 or $1,200 or $500 a month.
Yep.
And just go for 3 months. And I'm like, people have the right to do that. It's kind of weird when you're in this business where you're like, you feel like you can apply the brakes a little bit. So, yeah, I went for 3 weeks. I went to Europe. I was like, you know, I did some, a few conventions.
Well, that kind of helps subsidize.
Exactly. Basically, yeah. But I just wandered around a bunch of cities. I took trains everywhere, which is a very civilized way to go around everywhere. And yeah, it was good. What was the highlight of your 2 weeks off?
The highlight was, I mean, I love being busy. I cherish work. It's important. I appreciate it because I remember not having it. So I like doing it.
Yeah.
But the highlight of the entire time was honestly realizing that I didn't have to be anywhere.
Yeah.
That each day I just woke up and I was like, it literally doesn't matter what I do. I could do nothing. And I didn't do anything. I had planned every day I'm going to write stand-up for an hour because that's what I should be. And I didn't do any of it.
That's
I did
amazing.
Nothing.
High five.
No, but I feel like
that's
I should
amazing.
Have at least done a little thing. And then by the end, I thought I was going to be going crazy and I wasn't. I was almost ready to. God, it'd be great to do this for like another 2 weeks, just nothing.
I mean, that's good. That, like, to me, you know, unless if you're going to try to be another person and actually move your art forward, you need experiences that are not the same that you have already had, right?
Yeah.
Like, you can't become another person if you're always in the same room, looking at talking to the same people, look at the same websites, look at the same Twitter feed, you know, and you have to push the envelope of who you are. And the only way you can do that is get time to become something new.
Website routine?
I mean, I go to Twitter and I try not to check my at replies first. Just because I'm trying
Not the first thing in the day.
Not the first thing of the day. I actually try not to log on until after I've had my coffee and try to at least look at a blank sheet of paper and like list four things that I should be doing for myself. Because it's hard when you're like, oh, all these emails, they need me. Yeah, I don't have to think about myself. So, and that's weird to say, but I think it's important to have your own time. And then I intend on doing a lot of things. And I go to my Twitter feed because I actually follow a lot of like blogs and stuff like Vox.com and, you know, like Brain Pickers. I try to read thinky things in the morning.
Yeah.
And then I ended up looking at my RSS feed, which is like an old person's way of getting news. If you're familiar with it.
Yeah, I'm familiar with the RSS feed. I think the syndicator that I was using just folded.
They stopped. I know the one you're using. Now I use Feedly, which is very
good. Oh, yeah, you like Feedly?
Feedly is really good. I tried all of them. I even paid for a couple, but that was the one that I liked because it has a green accent. It's nice. It has some color. The other one was like too Spartan. Sometimes when you get like that very utilitarian PC design, a PC guy made this. It's very easy to use.
It works. What's the problem? Well, I don't know. There's not really a design aesthetic.
I don't want to be in here. It's like I'm in a prison, a virtual prison. Yeah, so I read a lot of like weird, I like just collect a lot of like personal blogs of people I never meet, you know, like some kind of Spanish designer and, you know, political pundit people. And I don't know. I like to expose myself to different people, even though my impulse is just to go to the gaming feed and see what's new so that I can bury myself in a couple hours. So, yeah, it's really exciting. My life.
Well, what do you think it was a year and a half ago that brought on the, like, what was crushing you?
Oh God, you know, there's a lot. I mean, I'm a very moody person and I have a horrible anxiety disorder and I suffer from some depression a lot. And, you know, I always feel like unless I'm trying to achieve something, I'm not worthy. And that's something I've actually dealt with a lot in the last year, just coming off, because you're, you know, I think I did see you a couple times. I was like, bye, I'm going to become a barista. And I actually took the year off and wrote the book because that was kind of like the thing I put myself back together with to be like, hey, where do I want to go from here? And so, I mean, it was overwork and being raised and in an environment where external praise was really what motivated a lot of my external things like achievements reflected my self-worth too much. It's like putting yourself into your work too much. And so the ups and downs that are not things that you can control, like people's approval or business or, you know, all those things, awards, you know, reinforcement of your creativity, like those things are not controlled by you. And therefore, when you put your self-worth in the hands of those things, the ups and downs of life will just kind of batter you a little bit more. Yeah, I went through that.
I've been thinking about a lot lately is basically making ego decisions. Like when you put your ego into external things, which is exactly what you're saying. When you put your ego into external things, then that's where you get really damaged. And when you make ego decisions, that's where you get really fucked up. And so I really do ask myself now, is this a healthy decision or is this an ego decision?
Yeah. Is there somebody in my brain who is wearing a very lovely Chanel suit saying, you should do that? I don't know, Chanel suit. I don't know why. I just love Audrey Hepburn. I don't think she was that driven. But or a power 80s suit. Like, you should do that because that will advance your career and these people will admire you and this will happen and then you'll open doors to this thing that you could do in 20 years. And I'm like, no, not so much anymore.
It's really – I think what's really helped me a lot is my relationship is really calm and wonderful and stable and nice and
that's good.
And we support each other. And so I know when I go home, I just like my home life just feels good.
Yeah.
And that's been very helpful because it kind of makes me feel like the rest of the stuff is all just sort of gravy. Like, oh, yeah, I love working is amazing and I love it and it's great.
But you're being accepted for who you are.
Yeah.
It's kind of like not to equate it, but like that thing that makes you know, I guess like kids and dogs and stuff, like they have that purity of like loving who you are.
Yes.
As a person, it's like, oh, that could be in real, you know, that could be in mature.
Wouldn't it be great if someone,
like, my friend could be here just because they're here.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, I actually, you know, I started like putting the brakes on a year and a half ago and I was like, okay, I'm too scattered. I'm trying to chase after this social group to be in that and to chase after this kind of thing. And like, I decided to spend a majority of my time reinforcing the relationships of, if I was a barista in Portland, who of my friends would still be my friends and pick me up at the airport at 2 a.m.?
Right.
And those are the people I tried to, like, spend the most time
with. By the way, if you were a barista, you would just get trolled in real life by people who are like, I asked for no water in this.
Oh, my God. I'm so allergic to almonds. I'm dying.
You're worse than Hitler. Well, I don't know. I feel like Hitler did a lot worse than just not put almond milk in your coffee.
It's true. Oh, my God. I have a rash now. Dermatitis. Got to go to the dermatologist.
But Will and I were having this conversation the night. We were just venting in general about... it feels like we kind of went through a thing where people were just being particularly mean, and then we had a moment where we were like, but it is nothing compared, and I'm not saying this to pander, this was literally part of the conversation, there we were two males on the phone, so we wouldn't say this for anybody other than ourselves, but it's nothing compared to what women on the internet have to deal with and what Felicia has to deal with, because we at least, you know, at least there's not like some kind of sexist vendetta against us, or that we don't, you know, in most cases, we don't feel like our safety is being threatened.
Well, I mean, it could be. I mean, as a guy,
it has been, but not. Yeah. But it's not a go. It's not an automatic go to.
Yeah. No. I mean, the things that make me. Yeah. If one of the litmus tests for these people to harass you is that, oh, you were born with a vagina, or you were born some way that you literally couldn't even help. You know, that's when the bullying is bad.
I mean,
bad.
If some dude says to me, like, I'm gonna rape you to death, I don't.
True.
I just go, well, fuck you.
Or just like, wow, I wish Felicia would go away. I don't want to fuck her anymore. I'm like, my condition of existence is your jacking off to a picture of me. Like, literally,
so
like, it's like my hair's growing out, right? And when I first cut my hair off, it was like, oh my God, I cannot ejaculate to this picture anymore. It's a real problem for me, Felicia. And my views went down, and I got all this backlash about, you know, and it was just like, wow, this is a real problem.
Well, it's, you know, if you, and hopefully you're able to extract, you know, your self-worth and protect it from all that dumb shit.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But also,
yeah.
You know, the thing that is that I think a lot of people hopefully understand is that when stuff like that happens, or when, you know, when you see view counts go down, it's not just, oh, we're narcissists and we need more people like us. It's like, it is the economy of...
That's the business.
That's the business. That is your actual business, because, you know... We were all of us put in situations where the entertainment business was like, we're good, no thank you, and so we started our own stuff, and that is the economy of the trade.
Yeah, and it is particular, like, I don't think it's totally men either, you know, it's women, you know, if you post a picture that you look really cute, and, you know, especially if you're in something revealing, you're going to get a million thousand times more hearts and thumbs up and all that reinforcement. And, like, I think that's almost like, you know, just down the line, it's kind of destructive as to, you know, you have that instant popularity gauge and you throw something into the water and you see how people like it, and you tend to chase after the things that people like in entertainment, right? You want to do the thing that's success. It's like an improv. If you have a joke, keep doing that joke, right?
Right.
So, but I do worry that, you know, that is the primary vehicle for which women get approval more so than men, about how great you look, how sexy you look.
Right.
Because if it's a I'm like, this is a beautiful sunset of this church, and look how beautiful, you know, look how I framed it. It looks like an album cover, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Don't care about it. Can't fuck that church. Yeah. Well, okay, sorry. I mean, that's why Amy Schumer's last fuckable day sketch is so,
oh my God,
so brilliant.
She's so wonderful.
Yeah.
She's so wonderful. And I, you know, I try to be like, especially, I try to be like Swiss neutral, because, like, to me, especially the labels that we with, like geek and gamer, there's so many controversy around sexism and gender identity and geeks and gamer culture. And I'm like, I've always been like a gamer first, you know? I don't like it when it's, you know, you have women in gaming panels, and it's like, well, I could be on the panel about storytelling gaming too, like,
right.
Please. But I understand that that's an effort to include. But at the same time, I've always tried to be like, hey, I'm a gamer. And when people project that perception that instantly, if you're a woman, you have, you know, they're almost more like pushing back on the fact that you are a woman in a sense, because you like games, and therefore your gender comes along with you, regardless if you want to bring it along with you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does. And it also, you know, I think what's difficult for some people to understand is that they'll go, oh, I get it. You're trying to infiltrate this culture as, you know, because you're a woman and you're this. Or, oh, I get it. You're trying to, you're fake nerd and you're trying to take over. And it's like, you know, maybe we're just people who like things and we just want to be around the things that we like because that's part of how you are happy in life. You are around things that you enjoy. And you pursue those things because they make you happy. Is it possible that maybe you just like to play games and maybe I just like, you know, what are classically defined as nerd shit and we just like those things? Like, is it possible? Is it possible that maybe it's not any more complicated than that?
I know. That's what I love about the internet, because the construction of the internet is all about people connecting around a thing they love. And they, you know, if I see somebody at a party and we can talk about our Skyrim potato house, like, I want to talk to that person. I don't care how old they are. I don't care how, where they're from. I don't care what race they are or gender or anything. I'm like, I want to talk to that person. And that's really what's beautiful about how geek culture has influenced the internet, because that's how the internet works.
Yeah.
Even though it's like all the popular kids are on the internet and they congregate around the things that popular kids or whatever, sports, fashion, everything. But that's where we are motivated to create community around. And I think that's beautiful. So I don't know. It's good and bad.
You will help Gisargo build potato house? You will help Gisargo.
Gisargo.
I accidentally killed Gisargo and I couldn't get him back. It was an accident.
No.
Yeah.
Why didn't you reload?
Because he was dead. I didn't realize he was.
I hate you so much right now.
No, I didn't kill him. It was okay. Let me set the scene. We were at the College of Winterhold.
But just by the way, Gisargo is basically the Antonio Banderas of catmen. All right, so for the listeners,
Gisargo, you will help Gisargo find a spell. So we were in the courtyard of the College at Winterhold, and you know, this dragon attacked, and then I went off. We killed the dragon, and then went off to do something else. You know, went inside, dropped some shit off in my locker in the Archmage.
So hard to get up there.
Yeah, it's a huge.
Why did you? Why did you even do that? I mean, you have to claim everything, but that's
no,
not
because I wanted to be the Archmage. Like,
I forgot.
To be the,
yeah.
And then I left. And then I realized Gisargo wasn't around anymore, but I had done enough other quests that by the time I got back, he was just dead in the courtyard.
No!
And so I was like, oh, and you know, it was one of those, you can like poke him and he just doesn't, you can move, like you can move their stiff body.
Oh, and, yeah, you could toss him around. You could kick him around a little bit.
And he was dead and there was nothing else. And so I just, so in terms of being a completionist, I never completed his quest line and I couldn't go back and
Well, it was too much to reload.
And I fucked up the Brotherhood of Thieves too.
Oh, that's my favorite. That's my favorite.
I completely fucked it up. I didn't complete something before that quest line ended. So, you know, that whole place just collapses and it's gone.
That's too bad because that's my favorite. But I always like being assassin. I played a stealthy archer and I would – and the problem is I think her name was Lydia, but I can't remember. Linda? Anyway,
it was probably Lydia. It was probably not Linda.
Yeah. It was something. Your first
companion.
Was
it Courtney the Wizard? No, it probably wasn't.
Chantal. Crystal. Anyway, so like I'm all about like stealthing around because I get very anxious. That's why I can't play co-op, you know, like League of Legends or so. I can't do competitive gaming.
Oh, right.
I have a panic reflex that it's just like, oh, I'll literally throw the controller up. So I stealth around and I'm like, oh, I'm set. I'm going to between the eyes. And then bitch comes in and she's like, her sword is swinging and she aggroes. And it's just kind of like Fallout New Vegas where basically you can't stealth or your companion character will just go in and whack a dude.
No.
Stop.
Well, you can make them wait. Like, you can say, like, wait here.
It's too much work.
But sometimes I find that they did not wait there. Like,
they never do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I told you to wait in the car. Courtney the Wizard.
Courtney. Crystal.
Yeah. Yeah, I miss those days.
You should try Witcher. There are some very personal, like you have a friend named Dandelion and he has an affair with a singer named Patrice. It is good. There's some good. You can get it on in the lighthouse.
I'm going to probably not be able to do that until
there are tits everywhere.
Oh shit.
And it's not good. I'm always a little bit outraged with this game when I'm running through and there's always prostitutes and harlots everywhere and they're always women and
you know what you should do is just give her a few gold coins and just take her dancing.
I want to give you a new frock and let's go to the ball.
I honestly,
what's gonna happen,
probably won't be able to do, I probably won't be able to really play it until I get a break in October. I get a break the week of Halloween.
Oh, there's too much. Fallout 4 is coming out. Dragon Age has a new expansion next week.
Yeah, I don't it's
or
unfortunate
some week.
It's unfortunate I don't have time anymore.
God, I mean, I shouldn't have time.
Maybe
I,
a, It's you know, though, you get to it is your business. Like, you get to justify it. It is your work.
I know. No, I got to work on stuff. I have several writing projects, but they don't have deadlines anymore. So that's
deadlines are so the best. I mean, they're stressful and they sit in the back of your neck for, you know, the whole time you have them. Am I going to finish? Am I going to finish? But yeah. Boy, so motivating.
I know. That book, I never would have finished. There's no way unless I had a knock, knock. Where's the draft?
Where did I see you? Where was it? Oh, it might have been. I think it was at our Xbox launch party. In March, where you said, I just finished my book today. Like, I saw you and you had just finished
it. It was the day of. Yes, you're right. Because I had I started January of 2014. So that was a 15, 16 month process.
Wow.
It was a long time. I remember, I was like, how long did it take you to write your book? And it was something like much better than that. I just felt like.
No, they put me on a very tight deadline. So yeah. I basically wrote my book in like 3.5 months.
No, you told me and I was like, ooh.
But I had to map it out to map it out and go,
you scienced it.
If I write 500 words a day. Yeah. On these days, I'll make it. And so I tried to stick.
But that's what I did, too, because I had like a draft. I had a draft. And because you told me that, really, I think I finished the first draft in 4 months. And then I let it sit for a month. And then I went back to it and rewrote it. And then in classic Felicia fashion, rewrote it another 15 times and then turned it in. And then we rewrote it more. I can never let it die.
No, that's good, though. That means you put a lot of care into it.
Take it from my dead hands.
I mean, I honestly... Oh, and also congratulations on being on you were number two the last time I saw the New York Times bestseller list. Did you hit number one?
I was I was number three in nonfiction, and I think I was number one or two in comedy and in scientists and humor. I've been on for 4 weeks on the Times
list. That's amazing.
That's pretty cool. Thanks, guys.
Do you feel the reward of that?
I do feel the reward, and then I came back to Hollywood, and then essentially I learned it didn't mean anything. So now I'm starting from scratch again.
You know, I think it's good to feel the reward, but understand that it doesn't mean everything. I think that's healthy.
Yes.
That's just healthy because, again, that's not putting your ego in the fact of whether or not your book was on the...
Exactly.
That's just a nice bonus, like, oh, I worked hard, and this happened, and there are nice people in the
world. Absolutely. I feel really proud of myself that I didn't get crushed, you know, or I don't have that complete letdown. Like, what's that? You know, I'm excited to start a new project, and I don't know if it's an acting job or a writing job or whatever, but yeah, you're right. I feel like I've progressed as a human in that, you know, that external gratification isn't everything. Like the Times list is great. I mean, obviously they can't take it away from me. I could tattoo it on my boob and it would be completely valid for the rest of my life. That would be a terrible place to tattoo because I think those things sag, but
and also if someone was like, prove it. You'd be like, take a boob out. Boop. Yeah, there it is.
I think the most gratifying thing was just completing it. I think just finishing it, knowing that I did the best job that I ever could. You know, that sense of like, as a creator, it's not about, it's about just seeing something through and really knowing it's the best thing you could do at the moment of who you are alive.
Yeah. And also there's security in knowing that, you know, because your book achieved this certain thing, there's just security in knowing that, well, if you wanted to write another book,
that someone
would give you,
somebody would take a chance. Yeah.
You could just write it and put it out yourself, but it is nice. It is nice sometimes to have a larger infrastructure help with all the stuff so that you don't have to do everything yourself, which you are very accustomed to doing.
Oh, I am accustomed to doing it. Actually, I have to tell you, like, you know, I did contemplate, like, I'm going to write a book. I could self-publish. I could just do it the Felicia way. And thank God I had the help. Because not only my editor awesome, but, like, the support they put around, you know, doing the book tour and all those logistics. Like, I mean, I did every logistics in the past. Like, it was all out of my house and it was two people. And, I you know, when you get a little help, you're like, well, how the hell did I do that?
Well, I was always so impressed with you because, you know, when Nerdist was starting to percolate, it was in the neighborhood of when Geek & Sundry started, and even before Geek & Sundry, and, you know, it, because I'm very much like, you know, hey, let's build a team, let's partner up, and let's all, you know, you're good at this, and I'm good at this, and that guy's good at this, and this lady's good at that, and we'll all come in with our, you know, our pantheon of strengths.
Yeah.
And I remember there was a time where you had to do everything yourself. And I'm like, you know, Felicia is like a maverick in the true sense of the word, but I don't think I could handle the pressure of having to do everything.
I think it was a lot. I mean, I don't regret it, but I think there was a lot of ego involved in that. That was my badge, that I did it myself. And I was like, I'm not going to let anybody help me. And I think that really bit me in the ass. I mean, to be honest with you, like, I think it's a combination of not, you know, not giving in and not dropping things because of resistance or because it's not, it's easy. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's real. That was really good. But the fact I didn't know well enough to really assemble a team, like you said earlier, to help me do the things that I didn't know how to do as well. I think that contributed to my not having a complete breakdown because I didn't know. I was in a world that I didn't know the tools, and I didn't know that I could reach out to somebody to do that, you know, accounting or biz dev or, you know, all these things that, like, no, I got to do it myself. It's Felicia Day way. That's what I'm known for, you know? So, I mean, I think it's about letting go of the past and risking it a little bit. And I think my anxiety, you know, having been more aware of it now that it kind of ruled a lot of the patterns in my life, it's like that fear of, like, well, if I do it different, it might not be a success. So I might as well just do it the same way until I collapse.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think there is a real... That there is a separate skill set in learning how to, I mean, I had to learn it too. I think part of what made me learn it quickly was realizing that I would buckle from the pressure because I just know there's stuff, there are certain things that I'm just not very good at. I didn't, yeah. You know, I didn't go to school for, you know, some things about business. It's like, that's not what I ever set out to do.
Yes.
You know, I entered school as a math major and left school as a philosophy major. Like, I, you know,
so why aren't you better at accounting?
I took animation, you know, like I didn't, if anyone said to me when I was starting school, like, you're going to graduate UCLA and then attend the Anderson School of Business. And I'd be like, oh, fuck you.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I don't want to do that at all. But now, you know, now because of the way things work, we're all sort of thrust into this situation where we all have to be businessy. Because, you know, we have to take responsibility for our own careers, and that's just part of the deal.
But that's good in a sense. And, like, you know, there's a whole generation of people who are now really in the digital space who have come from nothing, and now really qualified people are looking to help them or exploit what they built, you know, both
probably
of those
some
things.
Of the latter.
Yeah. And on the one hand, I'm like, oh my gosh, I hope that they protect themselves in that. I hope these people don't just use them, and then when they don't, when the down comes, which it will come with everybody's ups and downs, right? So hopefully they will take care of themselves and protect them, that they could have a long-term career, you know? I worry about the digital space in that way, but I'm also excited that now all the fancy people are willing to be like, oh, there's value there. Because when I started, nobody cared about the web. I would have to be like, yes, you can stream a video on.
Yeah, and then the sentiment was like, oh, that's cute.
Isn't it cute? Why aren't you doing something real?
Yeah,
you
know? It's not. When's it going to be? Well, I don't know. Millions of people are seeing it. It's adorable.
That's really cute.
More people are watching it than your television show.
Yeah.
What now?
Which is true now.
Oh, of course it's true.
It's, you know, it's not completely shifted over even
still
now. I mean,
the thing that makes me not as concerned about that with, you know, like the Vine stars and the YouTubers, and it's just that they all, like, even if traditional media comes in and does and it doesn't work out,
they can always
ultimately
go,
they started
platform.
As
yeah.
creators, like
yeah.
they it's not like they were it's not like someone spotted them in a diner and like, you washing the dishes, get on stage. You know, like, they started as creators, and ultimately
they can always go back and
that's
be
the
like
thing.
By it, the way, I'm it, just gonna go back and do my vlogging because that's where my audience
and that's what
is.
That's what always gave me a lot of security about being a comic is or you know, being a writer is saying, like, well, look, I don't, no matter who says I can do what, I know that's ultimately what the commodity is that I'm able to make stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, in theory, I don't really need anyone else for that. So if it all went away, I could still, you know, in the worst case scenario, just still make stuff and put it out myself.
Yeah,
and so
absolutely.
I feel like that's why a lot of them will be okay.
Yeah. No, they're fine. They're way better than an actor moving to LA.
Yeah.
They're just like, I'm going to be a star. Like, oh gosh.
Yeah. And you also, are you, did you make the jump to Snapchat?
I did. I'm on the Snap.
Oh, you did. That's right. Yeah, we talked about this a while
ago.
Well,
I lost my phone, so I haven't updated in a week. But
so that flip phone you're using isn't...
Listen, I found that... Okay, here's what happened. I was at Dragon Con, the best convention. It's the Mardi Gras for nerds. It's the best one.
I missed it. It was just this past... Yeah.
So, have you been?
I've been, yeah.
Yeah, it's
my great.
Favorite. It's crazy, but it's good. There's a lot of sweat. And anyway, so I lost and or... I think my phone was stolen because within 5 minutes of noticing it was gone, it was completely gone, and the phone was off. So I smell shenanigans. So anyway, I was literally, as I was getting on the plane, I got on the plane, I'm traumatized, but I had to find my iPhone thing. So I turned it on. I was like, hey, drop me a note. Nobody ever did. It was never in Lost and Found. So ultimately, I have no phone. So today is, what day? Oh, it's Friday. So they announced the iPhone. So this was last Sunday. And I was like, well, they're going to announce a new iPhone on Wednesday. And it's going to come out the 24th. I could wait 3 weeks and not have a phone. And the first 2 days, it was so liberating. I was like, bitch, you can't get me. I'm on the road. Guys on the road can't answer. I'm not going to answer emails until 5. I'm like, it was so empowering. And now I'm like, I need my phone.
Try texting on that flip phone.
Oh, I tried. I tried. I was that was really my breaking point when I was like, yes, please give me the number. I'm like, why can't I use my words?
You basically have to operate like an old text-based adventure game. Like, why? N.
Snake.
I mean, it's so now you are actually.
Yes. Yeah. So basically, I'm going to get another phone.
I very much enjoy Dragon Con. I do find it to be an interesting choice that they know that people are going to be in costume, and it's basically at the end of summer in Atlanta.
It is, yeah.
It's very hot. Very hot time of year.
And everyone's drinking alcohol, so it cools them from the inside.
No, it actually dehydrates you and makes it all worse.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, the costumes there this year were unbelievable. I think cosplay is really reaching a new level of like awesomeness. And it kicks Comic-Con's ass.
I mean, I remember when Dragon Con, it used to be famous for, you know, basically being like the orgy of the cons. But now there's so much. I mean, like it's the real deal.
Well, what I like is it celebrates really weird subcultures. Not really weird, as in judgy, but like very smaller subcultures that have, you know, a lot of fantasy authors, role playing games, furries. You know, Madame Langle. You know, all sorts of like really specific authors, even like Anne McCafferty. I think there's like a track on her, and vampire romance fiction, and like I love that everyone just comes together, kind of even on the video game side. Even
I think it'd be fun to do a just like vampire businessman series where there's no, if they're just they're just businessmen who,
and they order.
It sounds like
blood.
A Kids in the Hall sketch.
It does. Oh God, Dave Foley.
I would love to go back to Dragon Con, and it was kind of the end of my break.
You can only do so many cons.
I know.
I think I might take next year off or something, because it's wonderful but tiring. And there are a couple like Emerald City and Comic-Con, of course, and Dragon Con are like, I really don't like missing those.
Yeah.
But other than that, you know, being on the road, and I mean, you're on the road all the time, so it doesn't really matter, I guess.
I am. Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con International was really fun this year, but I'm not going to.
You like moderated 20,000 panels.
I'm not going to do it again. I mean, I'll do like
you
one or two.
You said that 3 years ago.
I know I did, but this year it was really too much. I mean, it was fun, but it's.
You got a lock on it though.
I was constantly like my brain hurt because you're constantly stressed that. Oh, you know, with this panel up here, and I got to make sure that I hit all these points that they want you to hit, and that everyone, and some of these actors don't like talking, and so they don't want to, they don't, you know, they're shy or they're cranky or whatever, so they don't want to make it easy for you. And in the most cases, it's fine, but then, you know, I got to keep moving, I don't have to hit by this time, and now Q&A, and now this, and now this clip, and we make sure I hit I got to mention this, and then
you're literally
promotion.
The energy, you're the engine
you're
of
the
every
energy,
panel, yeah.
And then multiplying that by so many times, plus all the other stuff we were doing, I realized this year, like, oh yeah, I don't have to take on that much, I'll moderate like maybe 2 or 3 panels next year, and then I'll enjoy.
I think this year I noticed that, and maybe it was just a perspective I had, but I think Comic-Con has reached a point where it is something completely different at this point than it used to be.
I feel like people say that every year, though.
I don't know. It's an old person like, in my day, the Comic-Con, you could get across the parking lot.
You just remember. You've just been a part of the evolution of it for so many years.
I guess you're
you've
right.
seen. I mean, it's one of those things where you go like, well, it can't get bigger next year. And then somehow they always manage to make it a little bit bigger.
Yeah. I guess I have a lot of friends who are like artists and indie booths, and they're basically giving up their booths this year, you know, for the future. That booth space is really hard, but it's just like an independent person has a hard time making it on the floor there. And it's like, well, that's fine. It's just a different kind of con. It's a more of a media event con versus like, I'm going to, you know, sell my, you know, handmade little doll, you know,
right.
Or carvings.
Because people are going to gravitate toward the things that they recognize.
The branded things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. So it's cool that the convention world has expanded to the point where you can have your VidCon, which is all, you know, very young kids, and that's a whole different kind of fandom.
Boy, if there's a convention to make you feel old, it's VidCon.
Oh, I was there to this year, and it was like, I grew up with your work. I'm like, I grew up, and I guess technically you probably did, because I've been.
No, I was too young to watch the Guild. What?
Yeah, my mom wouldn't let me watch it. It was
No. Yeah, that's painful. That's really painful. But I was just really happy this year. There was that moment where we were at our. We did the Geek and Sundry Nerdist party.
Yeah, the carnival. Yeah,
and you know, there was that moment in all the craziness where you and Will and I just found each other, and seeing you guys happy and seeing Will happy and being like, man, this is what it's all about. Like, that was such a great moment. That was such a nice moment.
That was the highlight, and the DJ was awesome. But yes, the highlight was like looking around and seeing like I loved that party because I looked around and I saw. People from digital, like who are big on YouTube, and creators from television shows and movies and business people. And then our friend, friends who are just like friends, who are comedians and, you know, people from every single art form that is in that world were at that party.
Yeah, it was really fun.
And it was great. It was a melting pot. You
it
know?
Was because I was, you know, you're terrible.
Authors.
I don't know if you were worried, but of course. You just never know when you – because it was the first year that we really did that.
Yeah.
And you just don't know if you're going to show up and it's going to be this big empty space and then the music is really loud because there's no bodies in there and it's just echoing. And you're like – you know, like this, like everyone who's working the party, you're sort of looking at the bar staff like, they're going to – you know, there's traffic. There's probably traffic. You know, but seeing that people actually showed up and seemed to be having a good time was fucking – it was so awesome.
Yeah.
That I hope we're able to do – you know, like I could almost just go next year and just do that and be happy.
Just the Legendary Nerdist Geek and Sundry, you know, that would be amazing.
How is Geek and Sundry? How are you doing with Geek and Sundry?
We're good. Like, we have, you know, like, it's really awesome, like, just being in the same space with, like, nerd. I mean, it's cool. It feels like a family.
Yeah, I don't know.
With Nerdist. Okay, so anybody, if you don't know.
Yeah, we're both owned by Legendary, along with Amy Poehler's Smart Girls. And so there's this big studio space that we all share that's, you know, relatively open floor plan.
Yeah.
And Geek and Sundry is right next to Nerdist. And so all of our editorial staff is there.
We cross over. Yeah, we support each other's work. And like, I love the fact that we can gravitate toward the things we really do well and then compliment the things you really do well. And we're not stepping on each other's toes. I just love it. It feels like a family.
Yeah, because in the beginning, when we both first... Especially when we launched the YouTube channels, which was the genesis of Geek and Sundry, people would try to pit us against each other with like Will or you or me and go like, uh-oh, you got competition.
Yeah.
And we would always go like, we're not competing. No. You know, we're all in the same. And so the fact that we are all kind of like, I think it's a good lesson for, you know, you can all do stuff in the same region and still support each other. And you don't have to be cutthroat about it. I mean, it's like everyone... And I think that's what part of digital culture is that we understand that sharing audiences, collaborating is the best way to go.
Well, especially when you're trying to invent something that wasn't there before, the more you help, like one person becoming a huge star over here and getting a lot of attention means that other people will get that.
Yeah.
Like, and I think it's the same. You remember as an actor, it's like, oh yeah, I got three lines on Law and Order, and you're like, fuck, goddamn, why wasn't that me? I could have been an older, you know, secretary woman. I could do that. I could totally. Why did she?
No,
get that
I don't think
me?
You came in here at that time. Cut.
Yeah.
Okay, we got it. Yeah.
So you remember that kind of seething like anxiety that like, why did he get that instead of me? Or how did she? Just like this irrational jealousy. Like, and I really wasn't that way, but I would actually have to. Not have friends because sometimes I would get a job and they would be like, oh, how great for you. It's really great. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
They would not be happy for you. And that kind of like, that's not your one person's success does not take away from your success.
No. Ever. There's
plenty to go around.
Especially now, there's more than enough room for everyone to carve out their little place and kind of set up their own camp.
Exactly.
It's important. It's important. And that's something I think people need to learn. When they're starting out, when they're starting something, it doesn't have to be like, oh, drats, I didn't get that one thing. Like it just doesn't.
Yeah.
It ultimately just doesn't matter.
I totally agree with you.
It's how podcasting started. All the podcasters did each other's podcasts. We share a lot of the same guests. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we all thrive.
And I think that also goes back to like, and I actually tell this to, I've told this to a couple of people, you know, just along the way, like, embrace your community. Like the people who are your friends or in your space now, you're going to be with them for years unless you quit. Like, so make friends and support each other, because no matter what, you're going to see them at a party and you're going to have a history with them, and they're still going to be here. They just are going to be higher up level because they're work their way. We're going to all work our way up. So like, value the strata that you're in as far as like, you know, age and interest and like area. And that will be your strength as you go through life. And that's something I don't think I appreciated earlier on.
Well, it was, but, you know, the landscape was different early on when you started the guild. There were not a lot of people.
Yeah.
And there were not a lot of people doing video. I mean, like, even when you look at Rooster Teeth and how far back those guys go with video, it was like they're putting up QuickTime movies. Yeah.
And they were always in Austin. And a lot of those people who pioneered like that weren't in LA. So there was like a really small, tight-knit sort of web series community-ish kind of thing, but like it wasn't comprehensive, and a lot of those people, you know, a lot of those early web series just didn't get a lot of places. So a lot of people either moved away or stopped or got into different business, or, you know, so it wasn't as tight-knit as like I think I see this digital generation are really tight-knit, and it's really inspiring.
I was also very happy to text you one of my favorite pictures of us from 5 years ago.
We had to put that up somewhere.
I don't know where to put it because there's nudity in it.
Well, can we blur it?
Yeah, I guess we can. But blur I feel like her it's hard. Her? It's yeah. hard to. So we Felicia and I were at a conference, some sort of nerd conference. Tech conference.
It was a television like TCA or not TCA, but it was like some weird something like that.
It was? Maybe I moderated a panel about that tech in. Okay, and so. You and I were standing next to a booth, and for some reason there was a poster. I don't even know what this booth was hawking, but it was a poster.
It was like straight-to-video movie.
It was a straight-to-video?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was an Emmanuel movie. But there's this woman like thrusting her large nippled breasts out, and that was the whole poster. And so we just took a picture of us pretending to have just a totally straight, normal conversation in front of us. And you just see these giant melon tit photobomb on the poster in the back row, you and I, where I'm saying something thoughtfully and you're listening.
Yeah, I'm listening really thoughtfully.
It's
like, such a great,
it's one of my favorite pictures, but I've never been able to figure out how to post it because there's no context, and you'd have to, if you blur out the boobs, then people know that you're aware of it.
Yeah.
And that really works.
It ruins it.
It really works when you can, you know.
Well, what you need to do is play Witcher and you'll see those breasts exactly in every single scene. I mean, literally, there's a scene where it's like, oh, there's like 40 breasts in this room.
Wow.
Okay, great. Good for you.
Any dongs?
Nope.
Really?
There is a butt scene. You see Geralt's butt very, very prominently. So there is a cowboy, in a sense, a low cowboy.
All right.
But I would like more equal opportunity nudity in that.
More dongs.
Yeah, more dongs.
More dongs and gaming.
More dongs and gaming. Do it. They'll be smoother in CGI.
You really want to make sure you get the dick physics down.
It's true. I don't know. Do they have the dangle down?
They really have to get the right amount. Yeah. They really have to. You just be constantly casting a spell to make sure. It's like, no, don't shrink. I'm out in public.
Swimming. You're swimming and going underwater trying to get some of these smuggler stashes. Oh, the cob piece is very roomy.
Well, I'm so glad that you're happy and that you're feeling good and everything's working out. And,
yeah, I appreciate it.
And the congratulations on the book, which is people can get now. And
you
they
are
get
never
now.
Weird on the internet almost.
You are never weird on the internet almost by Felicia Day.
People like the audiobook a lot because I narrowed it.
That's that part. Yeah, it would be weird if you didn't.
It would be weird. I'm like, oh, no, I can't do that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But did you do? It was it's a long slog. It's like 4 days of talking about yourself.
Yeah, like 4 or 5 hours at a time.
It's enough.
It is. Yeah.
I will be writing a book that's fictional next time, guys.
I feel like that's harder.
I don't know. Maybe I'll try it. Classic Felicia Day style. If I haven't done it before and I have no experience, let's dive head first.
You got to do it. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I'll do it. I'll self-publish. I'll do the cover art. No. Come on.
I'll learn how to draw. I'm going to the community college right now.
No, come on.
Figure drawing.
Take it down.
I could do a banana.
I do think... a banana for scale.
Yeah.
I do think, though, that is... You know, it's fun to try different things to see, you know, so you can learn the process.
Yes.
But I think you shouldn't feel obligated to have to do everything always because there are people, even if you're just starting out a thing, there's someone else who's just starting out their thing and maybe they do something that's complementary to what you do and you can work together.
Absolutely.
To both get the experience.
It's really true. And maybe you can have an infrastructure that they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Crazy thought.
Which is also helpful.
Nice. Well, thanks for having me on.
It's good to see you.
Thank you.
And enjoy your burrito, everyone.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye. Sorry, guys. This was fake.
Fake.
Totally fake.
Fake eggs.
Fake.
Fake podcaster.
Fake.
Such a fake podcaster.
Not a real podcaster. Not a real comedian. You're not a real host. You're not a real person.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. Like that car riding in your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.